Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to The Conservative Cauldron, Bewitching Radio.
Friday evening, all, one and all, you are here listening live on conservativecauldron.com. I'm your host, Becky Noble. Thanks to everyone who is here hanging out and chilling out with me tonight. And we are chilling tonight. It is just a tad nippy here in the Lou. But we've had a really busy week. There's been a whole lot of stuff going on. And you know, we've got a whole lot of time to talk about it now. In case anybody is here now who was not here last week, Conservative Cauldron Radio is now 60 minutes, 1 hour long. And I'm really excited about it, really psyched up, really pumped, and because it gives me a whole lot more time to, you know, gives us a whole lot of time to go into things and really, really dig into things and really talk about them and really debate them. And you know, that's why we're here. And so I guess I can go ahead and get started. Everybody, if everybody is ready to roll, let's roll, as they say. You know, last week we were talking about New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and the whole Bridgegate thing. And, you know, and I wrote about this over at Conservative Cauldron blog at conservativecauldron.blogspot.com. Believe it or not, you would never know it to watch the media coverage of this, but there actually are some worse things than Bridgegate, Trafficgate, as it's becoming known. And you know, I wrote about that over there, and we will talk about a few of those things later on. But you know, I think we all know that the media loves Chris Christie because They love him even though that he has an R after his name, because they know that he is a good go-to R when they want to sort of criticize Republican and GOP policies. And they know that he is a safe bet that a lot of times, because when push comes to shove, let's face it, Chris Christie really is a moderate Republican. And I think anybody who really follows politics is going to tell you that a Republican in New Jersey is very different from a Republican in Nebraska or Iowa. And he may be a Republican in New Jersey, but anywhere else in the nation, anywhere in the heartland of the nation, in the middle of the country, Chris Christie is going to be a moderate all day long. And, you know, so that's one of the reasons that the media has jumped all over this, in case anybody's been under a rock lately. It came out last week that in the city of Fort Lee, New Jersey, last year around election time, and Chris Christie was reelected last year in 2013. It was an odd year election. I'm kind of tongue tied tonight. I don't know what my problem is. Maybe it's the snow. Maybe it's the chill. But he was reelected last year, last fall, and he was looking for an endorsement from Fort Lee, New Jersey Mayor Mark Sokolich. And when he didn't get that endorsement, some of his staffers, and of course right now Chris Christie is claiming to have no knowledge of this, and you know what, until some really concrete evidence comes out that he did have some knowledge about it and that he was lying about it, you know, I think we need to take it, you know, if he says he didn't know about it right now today, he didn't know. If it comes out tomorrow that he did know about it, okay, we'll deal with that then. But right now, for the sake of this discussion, he didn't know about it. And so when this all came to light last week, Governor Christie fired several of his staff members, some heads rolled, including his deputy chief of staff, Bridget Kelly, and there was evidence that she had sent out some emails, and I'm paraphrasing here, some things to paraphrase, it's time for Fort Lee to have some traffic problems, things along that nature. And so Fort Lee is at one end of the George Washington Bridge, which is a very, very main thoroughfare into New York City from New Jersey. And long story short, it's funny of me to say that now after I've been rambling on, but two or three lanes of this bridge were closed down, and it caused a major, major traffic headache going from New Jersey into New York. And some people were stranded on this bridge for as long as 6 hours. And so there was this huge traffic snafu. And so last week in Governor Christie's State of the State address, he apologized to the people of New Jersey and the people of Fort Lee and so on and so forth. But now it has come to light that Governor Christie and his administration, there is an FBI investigation. I believe the FBI is heading up this investigation into any possible misuse of funds that the state of New Jersey got from for relief fund from Superstorm Sandy, and they are alleging that the Christie administration is hiding details of a $25 million Stronger Than the Storm advertising campaign, that money was used they're alleging that the money, instead of going to the proper places that it should go to for storm relief, that this money was going for such things as commercials to promote tourism to New Jersey, to bring people and businesses back to New Jersey that had vacated when the storm came through. And there is Representative Frank Pallone, a Democrat from New Jersey. He has had the Office of the Inspector General at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development auditing the state's decision to award an advertising contract to a firm that charged $2.2 million more than a comparable bidder for this work, came in at a much higher bid. And so now the feds are involved in this, and here's a little example of what they are saying that these funds possibly were used for. Here's a little snippet.
The word is spreading.
Because we're stronger than the storm.
You bet we are.
Okay, that's the audio from the Stronger Than the Storm advertising campaign. And what I'm unable to show you here on radio is that in this commercial, Chris Christie's family, his wife and his children, are walking along the beach, the New Jersey shore, and spending time on the beach in this commercial. And the problem is coming in here is that Governor Christie's family is in this commercial. And he is alleging that he went to the Obama administration prior to the production of these commercials, of these tourism commercials, and was told that this was perfectly fine. But, you know, now the feds are involved in this, and we will see where it leads, if it leads anywhere. But so Governor Chris Christie still under fire about not only the whole traffic gate, bridge gate thing, which is still under investigation. And again, it would have been really nice if Democrats had seen to immediately investigate a whole lot of other things that had nothing to do with traffic. Oh, such as, oh, I don't know, Benghazi, and we will be talking about that here in a minute, the Fast and Furious scandal, the IRS scandal. And, you know, it's only 2014, kids. We've got two more years to go. So I'm sure that we're going to be talking about more scandals in addition to those that are already on the list. So there was that. We will see what happens with Governor Christie and his administration and New Jersey Tourism Gate, which it will no doubt be come to call on. What's the matter with me tonight? But it's been a long day. It's been a long week, but here we are. Thing here that went on this week, you know, I think that we have all it's quite obvious by now. We are entering the sixth year of the Obama presidency. And, well, we have all come to find out that being the constitutional scholar that President Obama is, well, that includes having a little bit of an independent streak. And we have found out in these last 6 years that, well, sometimes President Obama has a little problem with Congress. He feels like they're kind of in the way, and he has to work around them because they're just not letting him do what he wants to do. And my question would be, well, if you are a constitutional scholar, why don't you know that is part of their job? There's a little phrase that people who are familiar with the Constitution and how it works, and a representative republic, which is what the United States of America is, those of us who are familiar with the workings of that particular form of government, there's a little phrase called checks and balances. And what that means is those three branches of government, no branch is more important than the other. Each branch gets to check and balance. There's that phrase. Each branch gets to check and balance the other branch. So nobody is taking power into their own hands and doing things all on their own without any say from other branches of government. And, you know, the thing now is that Barack Obama is never going to be on another ballot. His name is never going to be on another election ballot. And he knows that. And because of that, he can, you know, he can pretty much let it all hang out at this point. And anything that maybe he thought he had to possibly hide in that first term, well, it is all out in the open here right now in the second term. And so he was talking about this week, he had talked about the use of executive order. And, you know, here's the thing. Every single president has used executive order. Republican presidents have used it. Democrat presidents have used it. It's nothing new. It's really not a big deal. The only time that it becomes a big deal is when it is used as an end run around the Congress. And for a lot of things that are going to be coming up, you know, things related to economic recovery, things related to health care, things like that, you know, he doesn't want to be bothered with Congress. And he's all but come out and said that. And there was a press conference earlier this week before a cabinet meeting, and this is kind of what President Obama had to say on the whole thing.
Things that I'll be emphasizing in this meeting is the fact that we are not just going to be waiting for legislation in order to make sure that we're providing Americans the kind of help that they need. I've got a pen and I've got a phone, and I can use that pen to sign executive orders and take executive actions and administrative actions that move the ball forward in helping to make sure our kids are getting the best education possible, making sure that our businesses are getting the kind of support and help they need to grow and advance. to make sure that people are getting the skills that they need to get those jobs that our businesses are creating. And I've got a phone that allows me to convene Americans from every walk of life, nonprofits, businesses, the private sector, universities, to try to bring more and more Americans together around what I think is a unifying theme, making sure that this is a country where if you work hard, you can make it. And so one of the things that I'm going to be talking to my cabinet about is how do we use all the tools available to us, not just legislation, in order to advance a mission that I think unifies all Americans, the belief that everybody's got to take responsibility, everybody's got to work hard, but if you do, that you can support a family and you know, meet the kinds of obligations that you have to yourself and your family, but also to your communities and to your neighbors.
So, you know, there it is. It's all he's pretty much like, here it is, here's what I'm going to do. You know, if you got a problem with it, that's on you. And, you know, I think he was not very specific on purpose, because I think a lot of times what happens with these executive orders is that they are kind of snuck under the radar, and you don't really know, you know, the media is not paying any attention to it. They're paying attention to Chris Christie and traffic on the George Washington Bridge. They're not paying attention to any executive orders that Barack Obama signs and puts into action and decrees, because apparently he thinks that we have some sort of monarchy in this country. Jay Carney and his beard was, you know, that beard, it's you know, Jay Carney looks like he's 12 to begin with. And, you know, what he reminds me of with that beard is that he reminds me of a 13-year-old boy who's just realized that he's growing facial hair and it's really cool, and he's just going to grow it out to see how long he can get it. Maybe he, you know what, maybe he was inspired by Phil Robertson. That is it. Jay Carney has been inspired by the Duck Dynasty guys. But when he was asked about these forthcoming, these mysterious executive actions, Jay and his beard walked up to the mic, and he said that the president will seize opportunities to work with Congress when possible. He went on to say, but he will not limit himself and certainly doesn't think the American people would want him to limit himself just to what he could do legislatively through Congress. As president, there is a lot more he can do, and he has demonstrated that throughout his term in office, he will continue to do that with renewed vigor this year, because there is much to be done, and there is great opportunity to get it done using every means available to him. And I think pretty much what that means is, you know, if you don't like it, that's tough schmoles for you. So we should be looking in the near future for a lot of executive orders, things that just automatically, you know, are there and just automatically are. They just automatically exist because of the executive order. And again, like I said, every president has done this. Republicans have done it. Democrats have done it. But it's I'm going to use this word. Maybe somebody else wouldn't use it, but I'm going to use it. It's being abused in a way that I don't think that it has been abused before. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say that every president has issued executive orders, you know, right in the exact way that founding fathers intended them to be used. But, you know, with this president, with this administration, you know, we're getting into areas that we have never gotten into before. And he also went on to talk about, while he has his pen and while he's holding his pen and he's using his phone, he's going to be using his phone to talk to people, people like professors and economics people and things like people who haven't been elected. What he said was, I'll also be pulling together university presidents from all across the country to talk about how we can make college education more accessible to more young people around the country. We're going to be bringing CEOs from across the country to also have a conversation about commitments they can make to start hiring the long-term unemployed. Because of the misfortune of having been laid off or lost their jobs during the depths of an extremely severe recession, have been out of work long enough that now we're finding out it's very hard for them to just get in the door and make their case to an employer. Well, that would be because of you and because of your economic policies that are continue to strangle this nation and continue to strangle business and especially small business owners. So while he's busy, you know, basically collapsing the American economy, he's going to make it look like that he's helping out people who are the long-term unemployed. And so I'm sure that we are going to be seeing more executive action pertaining to such things. So that should be very interesting to see. And, it'll also be interesting to see how Jay Carney and crew, spin these things because, you know, like I said, all bets are off at this point, and I don't think that Barack Obama is going to ever see himself as a lame duck. He sees it as kind of open season, and that he can pretty much do whatever he wants to do, and if he needs to bypass Congress, he'll do that. So there was that. Also, you know, one of Barack Obama's old friends is back. We all know him. We all love him. We all remember such favorites, such golden oldies as Goddamn America and the Chickens. I don't know if I can say it like he does. We all remember the Chickens have come home to roost. You know him. You love him. He's back. The Reverend Jeremiah Wright. He has surfaced. Yes, folks. Reverend Jeremiah has surfaced once again. This week, Reverend Jeremiah, possibly with his chickens roosting, possibly not. I'm sure that's probably a racist statement. I'm sorry. If MSNBC were listening, I'm sure Melissa Harris Perry would be talking about what a racist I am. But anyway, Reverend Jeremiah was in Chicago. Chicago, of all places. Imagine that. He was in Chicago. He was the keynote speaker at a Martin Luther King Day celebration. Let's all just take in the irony of that for just a minute. When we remember those golden oldies like Goddamn America and all of those wonderful inspirational sermons that Reverend Jeremiah Wright is so famous for. Reverend Jeremiah was the keynote speaker at a Martin Luther King Day celebration in which the Chicago Teachers Union was celebrating. And, I think that Reverend Jeremiah and Barack Obama are not so much BFFs anymore. We're going to listen to Reverend Jeremiah here in just a minute.
President Obama's combative former pastor back in the spotlight and again stirring up controversy. The Reverend Jeremiah Wright now joining forces with the Chicago Teachers Union. And today he had some not so nice things to say about the president, about the Obama administration. Was his appearance political payback? And should the president be concerned? George Howell reports now from Chicago.
Remember this?
God damn America!
The controversial comments from President Obama's former pastor, Reverend Jeremiah Wright. He's been silent since the president denounced him during the 2008 presidential campaign, but today he returned to the spotlight.
Let's receive warmly our keynote speaker, the Reverend Dr. Jeremiah A. Wright.
Wright spoke at a breakfast celebrating Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, an event sponsored by the Chicago Teachers Union, which is no stranger to controversy, as the union engages in a very public showdown with the school system and Mayor Rahm Emanuel, the president's former chief of staff. CNN was invited to attend the breakfast, but just as Wright took the podium, all TV cameras were kicked out. Reporters were allowed to stay inside, and that's when Wright started throwing punches directly at the Obama administration. First, calling into question whether Secretary of Education Arne Duncan is qualified for the job, suggesting Duncan only got his job because he, quote, has a good hook shot. a reference to his basketball games with the president. He went on to compare Dr. Martin Luther King's famous quote, "I have a dream," to the Obama administration, saying for the president, quote, "I have a drone." We were able to capture part of this on a camera phone.
The truth about our politicians and the policies of this country, every Tuesday morning there's a kill list that the president decides who we're going to kill this week. That's not the man of peace that you just talked about. That's a man controlled by government. It's a government based on militarism, racism, and capital. We need to teach the truth, even when it's painful.
Wright left the event avoiding cameras. The president of the Chicago Teachers Union, Karen Lewis, defended Wright's comments when he compared himself to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Wright argued that the famed civil rights leader was reduced to only, quote, sanitary sound bites, just as Wright says he had been reduced to sound bites.
Well, I think we always focus in on a very small portion of the work he was trying to accomplish. And very few people actually take that one step further. So Dr. Wright has clearly done that. These are the things that we talk about when we talk about social justice.
CNN political analyst John Avalon says Wright took the opportunity to do major political axe grinding.
Well, it's pretty clear that Reverend Wright feels betrayed by President Obama. The two were very close at one time. But here he is directing all those attacks about racism, classism, and the U.S. is a militaristic power at President Obama. It's an amazing falling out.
George Howell, CNN, Chicago.
So I think that Reverend Jeremiah and President Obama are not so much BFFs right now. You know, the whole when you listen to the things that he talks about, a kill list every Tuesday morning. First of all, how in the hell would Jeremiah Wright know about anything going on a Tuesday morning at the White House if he and Barack Obama are no longer friends? I just, you know, and to for him to compare himself to Martin Luther King, I'm certainly no expert on Dr. King, and I'm no expert on specific things that he talked about, but a man like Jeremiah Wright, and I really even hate to use the term, I hate to use the term Reverend on him, like I hate to use the term Reverend Jesse Jackson and Reverend Al Sharpton, because they're like the Three Stooges. There's nothing reverend about any one of the three of them. All they do is espouse hatred and division and class warfare and race warfare, and I don't know about Reverend Jeremiah. We know that Jesse and Al would not have jobs if it were not that racism was fomented around this country. But, you know, there are things that I do know about Jeremiah Wright, and I do know that he was I believe he was a World War II veteran. I'm not sure how old a man he is, possibly Korea. I know he is a war veteran. And so he has fought for this nation, and he's fought for this country. And as a veteran, you know, we should be thanking him for his service, but... And it's really interesting. How would you go from a man who fought for this nation to go to someone who has so much hatred for it? Because he very clearly has hatred for it, and that's also ironic in the fact that his hatred for this country has made him a multimillionaire. And when you listen to clips of him speaking at his church, you know, old clips from back around the 2008 presidential campaign and things like that, if my memory is correct, there are around 3,000 members of this church in Chicago. And the crowd of people, when he gets them all revved up, when he gets them all riled up, the amount of whooping and hollering and cheering and clapping that's going on when he speaks is really kind of chilling. It's really, really chilling to hear a man who has so much hatred for this country. You know, I'm really not sure why he's still here. I mean, no one is keeping him from going anywhere else in the world if he does not like America and he doesn't want to be here and he wants to live somewhere else. But the thing with that is that Jeremiah Wright and anybody else like him could go to any other country in the world, and they are not going to have the lifestyle in any way, shape, or form in any other nation on the planet that they do right here in the United States. And he knows that. He's not ever going to say it to you. He's never going to say it out loud, but he knows that. So he has become rich. Jeremiah Wright has become a rich man off of hating this nation. You know, that's it's really quite sad when you think about it. Anyway, there's that. We are going to take a break. You are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm your host, Becky Noble. I want to thank everybody for hanging out with me tonight. We're going to take a little break, and I will be right back. Stay close. Here we are. I thought I was on the mic, but now I'm not because I'm kind of a rookie and I'm not a professional radio person. So anyway, here we are. We're back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm your host, Becky Noble. Thanks for hanging out and chilling out with me tonight because it is a chilly night in the loo, my friends. Let me tell you that. So anyway, we've got a lot to get to still here tonight. We have the Senate report finally on the Benghazi attack. In Libya, and you know, I don't think there's a whole lot of there's not a whole lot of surprises here. This report it says definitely declares that individuals tied to Al-Qaeda were involved in the Benghazi attack, despite what President Obama, despite what Hillary Clinton, despite what Susan Rice, despite what anybody in the Obama administration would have you believe, that it is a comprehensive report that does say, in fact, that Al-Qaeda operatives were involved in this attack. And this is despite a recent New York Times piece that claimed otherwise. This report was released on Monday. It says the administration initially claimed that the attack sprung out of a protest but has since given a more complicated explanation. Still, administration officials all along have downplayed Al-Qaeda involvement. Of course they have. They've downplayed Al-Qaeda involvement because this was Barack Obama's standing on the battleship mission accomplished moment. He, in no way, as soon as Osama bin Laden was dead and as soon as he decided that Al-Qaeda was on the run, he came out and said so. And anything else that was going to happen, be it here or in the Middle East, was in no way going to be Al-Qaeda involved. whether it actually was or not. And this goes on to say that individuals affiliated with several terrorist groups, including Ansar al-Sharia, who, again, that was suspected in this case. It says the Senate committee report stressed that the intelligence still suggests the attack was not a highly coordinated effort, but more of an opportunistic effort, that something that, that possibly was planned, but was planned very hurriedly and planned very quickly. It remains unclear if any group or person exercised overall command and control of the attacks. It says the report, though, reiterated that there was no protest in Benghazi. There was no protest over a video. So, you know, they can keep floating that story, but this investigation proves otherwise. It says the Senate panel report also dove extensively into what went wrong at the U.S. mission in Benghazi before the committee determined the attack was preventable and the administration failed to respond to ample security, that the security was deteriorating rapidly prior to September 11th. The report faulted the State and Defense Departments. It also cited the failure of the Obama administration to bring the attackers to justice. Specifically, the report said that the intelligence community provided ample strategic warning that the security in the area, like I said, was deteriorating. Other consulates had been attacked. The British had problems a few months prior in June, I believe. We had also had a prior attack on our own consulate several months earlier, and that U.S. personnel were at risk. The report said multiple tripwires, as they called them, were cross-signaling problems. And at the time of those tripwires being crossed, the State Department should have immediately sprung into action and did something to beef up security. We know that Secretary of State Hillary Clinton received several emails, a few, I believe it was reported by Ambassador Christopher Stevens himself, asking for beefed up security, and that security was denied. Here's a little bit more on that report.
Now to the politics lead. A newly declassified report out today states that the attack on the U.S. diplomatic mission in Benghazi that claimed four American lives never should have happened. Both Democrats and Republicans agree the attacks were preventable. The attacks that horrific night claimed the lives of U.S. Ambassador Christopher Stevens, Sean Smith, Glenn Doherty, and Tyrone Woods. The bipartisan report from the Senate Intelligence Committee faults the State Department, saying officials there ignored, did not respond, or did not fulfill cables asking for more security personnel. Senator Dianne Feinstein is chair of the committee.
The security was inadequate and should have been beefed up.
The report states that despite initial official statements, the intelligence community now believes there were no protests outside the Benghazi facility sparking a siege of the U.S. compound. And despite claims that the attacks were spontaneous, the report says, quote, the collective assessment of the intelligence community remains that the attacks were deliberate and organized. Something U.S. officials, including now National Security Advisor Susan Rice, contradicted in the immediate aftermath of the attacks.
Our current best assessment, based on the information that we have at present, is that in fact what this began as was a spontaneous, not a premeditated, response to what had transpired in Cairo.
But the report blames those misstatements on the intelligence community for not correcting its initial erroneous reporting. Terrorist groups were involved in the onslaught, including two al-Qaeda affiliates and Ansar al-Sharia, the report says. The report also shoots down the unsubstantiated allegation that the military could have possibly saved the lives of the four Americans killed in the assault, but had been told to stand down. Sadly, security conditions on the ground in Benghazi remain in tatters. The report notes disturbingly that 15 individuals supporting the FBI's investigation have been killed in Libya since the attacks, though it's not clear that's why they were killed. In separate statements at the end of the report, the Democrats on the committee assail others for misinformed speculation and accusations long after the basic facts of the attack have been determined. Republicans on the committee are going after the Obama administration for refusing or being unable to attain accountability from the attackers themselves and from those U.S. government officials who made poor management decisions relating to the Benghazi facilities, singling out for ultimate criticism former Secretary of State and potential 2016 presidential candidate Hillary Clinton.
So here's the thing. There are Democrats and Republicans alike who are supporting this Senate intelligence report. And one thing I know that jumps out at me, and you know, when you want to, if you want to talk about this in relation to the 2016 presidential election, you know, earlier we were talking about Chris Christie, and there are so many people right now who are right now in 2014. We're still 2 years out from this, but there are plenty of people you can shake a stick and find somebody who is willing to say to you that, should Chris Christie decide to run for president, that his chances are all but dashed now because of a traffic jam. But anybody who wants to implicate Hillary Clinton in this, and I'm sorry, but you have to, she was the Secretary of State, you know, the buck stops there. The buck stops with her in the State Department. She is the face of the State Department at that time. And so if she also has presidential perspirations, what you're telling me is that Chris Christie is all but washed up, all but done because of a traffic jam, but we're talking about four dead Americans here, one of them an American ambassador whose body was dragged through the streets of Benghazi while this was all going on, and she had been asked, security beef-ups had been asked of her for weeks, even including by Ambassador Stevens, and those requests were ignored, but that in no way is going to inhibit her chances to become the Democratic nominee for president. Are you kidding me? You know, there's just, I don't know how she is going to be an albatross around her neck from now until the end of time, because 2 years from now, nobody is going to remember a traffic jam on the George Washington Bridge, but I can guarantee you, and again, this is going to be the job of conservatives and Republicans. It's going to be their job to keep this front and center and keep it in the minds of the American people that we have four dead Americans here, and a year and a half out, we still don't know exactly what happened that night. And Hillary Clinton has a key role in this. She is a major player in what happened. We don't know exactly how or why or when. We don't know the ins and outs, but she wants to be the commander-in-chief. You know, we'll just – I'm going to leave it at that. A year and a half out, we still don't know her exact involvement or the lack of it or whatever it was during this attack and the time leading up to the attack and the time after the attack, but she wants to be the commander-in-chief. That's all I'm going to say. Also this week, while we're talking about Hillary, there is a new book out. It was written by Amy Parnes, who writes for The Hill, and Jonathan Allen, who writes for Politico. And they have authored a book together. It's about Hillary Clinton, and it is called HRC, State Secrets and the Rebirth of Hillary Clinton. And obviously what this is probably a big cheerleading session for Hillary Clinton in 2016. But anyway, what Amy Parnes and Jonathan Allen are alleging in this new book is that, well, Hillary has kept score. Hillary has a list. It's right now, and you know, this is a book by two people. You know, people can write a lot of things in a lot of books. So, you know, this is from this exact article here is from The Blaze. It's from Monday. But anyway, these two people have written this book, and they are talking about a, quote, hit list that supposedly that maybe not so much Hillary has, but Hillary's staffers have. And what that hit list entails is what they say that happened is after Hillary Clinton dropped out of the campaign in 2008, one of the last things that her campaign staffers did, supposedly this is recorded on a Microsoft Excel spreadsheet, that her staffers, and you know what? Hillary Clinton's not going to have her fingerprints on any of this. You know, if there is a so-called hit list, you are not going to see any evidence of Hillary Clinton herself attached to this hit list. But what supposedly transpired is that staffers, they kept a list of names and deeds of certain congressional members. And since they carefully noted who had endorsed Hillary, who had backed Barack Obama, and who stayed on the sidelines. They say this is standard operating procedure for any high-end political organization. But apparently there is much more nuanced was the word they used. There's much more data to all of this. And basically they wanted to know who helped and who hurt, you know, who's our friend, who's our enemy. That's the long and the short of it. And it says, you know, they wanted, again, they wanted to know who burned her, who helped her. It's the book sums it up, meant that when asks rolled in, like people asking for endorsements and such things, she and Bill would have at their fingertips all of the information needed to make a quick decision, including extenuating, mitigating, and amplifying factors so that friends could be rewarded and enemies punished. Now, where have we heard that phrase in the not-so-distant past about rewarding your friends and punishing your enemies? Oh, I know. That's right. Barack Obama said it. He used almost the same exact wording. So with that in mind, here is just a little who's who of the supposed hit list that the Clintons have kept on file. Low these 6 years. The hit list includes John Kerry. I believe we know him now as Secretary of State, John Kerry. Jay Rockefeller, West Virginia Senator. Bob Casey, Senator from Nebraska. Patrick Leahy of Vermont. Chris Van Hollen, who's a congressman. Barron Hill. Rob Andrews, also a former congressman, the late, great Ted Kennedy. And, you know, as far as Ted Kennedy goes, Ted Kennedy is going to have someone way, way more powerful than Bill and Hillary Clinton judging him. Let's just leave it at that. But the coup de grace, the cherry on the cake of said hit list is none other, drum roll please, none other than Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill. That's right. Our very own Claire Bear is at the top of this list. And, you know, just looking at it here, I don't know if this is a list that you want to be at the top of. Apparently, well, let's just say that Hillary and Claire will not be doing lunch anytime soon. Allegedly, the book goes on to say that hate is too weak a word to describe the feelings that Hillary's core loyalists, now again, this is not Hillary Clinton saying this herself, these are her peeps, her soldiers, her loyal soldiers, too weak a word to describe the feelings that Hillary's core loyalists still have for McCaskill. The animosity follows comments the senator made about Bill and her decision to be a visible champion for Obama. And I do remember these comments when they were made. This is just a little excerpt from the book here. I don't want to read too much. I still got some things we need to go into here. But at one time, I'll kind of sum it up here for you. At one time, and this was around 2008 election time, that Claire McCaskill had made a comment about Bill Clinton, something to the effect that she would not want her daughter to be in a room alone with him. And I think we all can figure out what Claire Bear was referring to there. And, well, apparently that got Hillary's panties in a little bit of a bundle. And so I guess we all know Hillary is a stand-by-your-man kind of woman. You know, she is going to defend Bill, and she is not going to let anybody say they are not going to let their daughter be in a room alone with him. But apparently Claire knew that was a big mistake as the words were still hanging in a bubble over her head. And the story goes is that she kind of did everything she could to, you know, to make up for that. And Hillary kind of wanted to overlook it a little bit because she wanted the endorsement. There were several other female governors, female congresswomen, senators that whose endorsements that she wanted, and she thought maybe going through Claire McCaskill that that might that those might materialize. But you know, at the last minute here, Claire decided to endorse Barack Obama. It says that she, Claire McCaskill, called none other than, and you can't make this stuff up. It's like a soap opera. Claire gave a little shout-out. Claire gave a little phone call to Huma Abedin, who we all know is Hillary's right-hand woman and is also wife, is Mrs. Weiner. Huma is Mrs. Anthony Weiner, in case anyone did not know that. And because Claire did not want Hillary to be blindsided and taken off guard by her endorsement of Barack Obama, and I think things have just kind of gone downhill from there for Claire McCaskill and her relationship with the Clintons. But so, you know, whether or not this hit list actually exists, you know, who knows? I think that when it comes to the Clintons, I usually take the approach that damn near anything is possible with because, well, they're the Clintons. And you know what? Here's the thing. Love them or hate them, the Clintons know how to play the game. They're both excellent politicians, and they know how the game is played. Nobody said the game was going to be pretty. They know how to play the game. So we may find out in the coming weeks and months if such a hit list actually exists and who else is on it. But also we had a local story here in St. Louis. This happened yesterday, and this is really, wow, if I had kids in this school a reporter for KSDK TV here in town. Basically, the story went that they were trying to do a story on school security and how efficient it was. And so a reporter for KSDK got into Kirkwood High School. He was stopped and asked what he was doing there. He gave a name and a cell phone number. He then asked for directions to a restroom, and as he went down the hallway towards the restroom, he went in an opposite direction of the restroom. Also, when he first came in the school, he asked to speak to a security, someone heading up security at the school. But so fast forward, he asks for the security officer, then asks for directions to a restroom, goes down an opposite hallway that's in the direction of the restroom. At that point, no one can find him. They try to call the phone number, and they get nothing but a voicemail. So then he must have identified himself as someone from KSDK, because then the phone calls went out to KSDK-TV, and no one would really confirm that he was one of their people. So long story short, at that point, the school goes into lockdown. And it really was just kind of a it was a sloppy way to do this story. And you know what really should have happened here probably, and someone who is much more versed than I am in investigative reporting said this today, that what should have happened was that this guy went into the school and did his thing, but then as soon as he got in and was walking around, you know, someone who is an investigative reporter who could be identified with the TV station should have gone in and said, hello, I'm so-and-so with said TV station. We're doing a story on school security here. My guy just walked right in and went wherever he wanted to go in the school. Therefore, your school security sucks. What's the deal? But that didn't happen, and needless to say, there were plenty of angry parents whose children were involved in this lockdown at Kirkwood High School. And I can't believe at this point that some heads are going to roll and some heads are going to be fired. And it was just a pretty outrageous story for a pretty reputable news outfit here in town, a pretty reputable news organization. And so we will see what happens there. But real quick, we have to get to a new segment here at Conservative Cauldron Radio. It is called WTF Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Okay, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. I think we all know what that means. We just got a few little tidbits here, just a few little ditties here. Jimmy Kimmel, late night show the other night, they did a really fantastic. It's a commercial about Obamacare. Ooh, I hope I'm going to have enough time to play it here. I'm going to play just a little excerpt here. The video is really funny, but obviously I don't have the video here, but the audio is pretty good too.
The rollout of the Affordable Care Act continues to be terrible. First, there were technical problems with the healthcare.gov website. Now comes news that not enough young and healthy Americans are signing up for coverage, which is crucial for the success of the program. The way insurance works is you need all the young, healthy people to pay for insurance and not use it until they get old and unhealthy. And so far, only a quarter of the 2.2 million people who signed up are between 18 and 34, 24%. The White House was hoping for closer to 38%. Why they would hope that, I don't know. They expect young people to buy insurance at the same time the PlayStation 4 comes out? You know, if you want young people to sign up, maybe you shouldn't have made the law so you can stay on your parents' plan until you turn 26. I mean, what kid is going to say, you know, no thanks, Mom and Dad, I got the premiums covered. The deadline to sign up is March 31st. In my experience, if you want to get young people to do something, all you have to do is tell them specifically not to do something, right? Or give 10 free lives in Candy Crush to the first 2 million subscribers. But just to make sure the younger people do sign up, the Obama administration is rolling out a new ad campaign that's targeted specifically at the young and vibrant.
Hi, I'm Alex, and this is my wife, Martha. And we're both approaching the big 6-0.
And we have health care issues to deal with.
I take blood pressure medication.
And Levitra.
Yes, and Martha's got beta blockers and something for her osteoporosis. It's not cheap.
But fortunately, we don't have to pay for it.
No, you do.
That's right. You young people are paying for our drugs and our doctors.
Not to mention our Social Security and our Medicare when we retire to Boca. And you know why?
Because you don't vote.
And we do.
That's right. Hope you enjoy that Burning Guy Festival.
Come on, Martha. Let's go find that Levitra.
Oh, Alec.
The Affordable Care Act. Next time, maybe pick up a newspaper.
A newspaper, FYI, is like an iPad made of trees.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. If you can get a chance, go on YouTube and you can get the whole thing, the visual and the audio, because it really is pretty funny. And just real quickly here, I'm going to get us in the mood to, well, we got to talk about Justin Bieber. And so if we're going to talk about Justin Bieber here, we're just going to get a little bit of, we're going to jam a little beeps here. We're going to do a little, hurry up, beeps. I don't have a whole lot of time here, we're just going to jam a little beeps here. Hurry up, beeps. Beeps is cool. He's so cool. The chicks dig him.
Just as sure as the stars in the sky, I need you to shine.
Okay, I can't take anymore. But Justin Bieber got in a little trouble because he was egging his neighbor's house earlier this week, and so that's what's going on with that. But anyway, I don't have a whole lot of time left here, so I just want to thank everybody for hanging out with me tonight, and I'm sure we're going to be talking about all kinds of things. We're going to be talking about the NSA next week, more executive action, more Hillary Clinton and Benghazi, and a whole lot of other things, so please go to where it all started, conservativecauldron.blogspot.com. Please go to facebook.com/Becky Noble. I am on Twitter at Patriot Witch, and please check out examiner.com. And pretty soon, hopefully in the near future, you can go to News Ninja. I will be writing some things there. So thanks, everybody, for hanging out with me tonight. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. See you next time.